Hi, this is the American Psychological Association's Division 15 podcast series on emerging research in educational psychology. My name is Jeff Green. Thanks for joining us. So today we're doing something a little different here on the old podcast. Rather than talking about emerging research, we're going to talk about an exciting new initiative for helping people acquire essential educational psychology knowledge, skills, values, and identities. It's called the Framework for a Professional Master's Degree in Applied Educational Psychology. This framework is the result of hard work from many people on Division 15's Practice Committee, specifically a subcommittee on applied educational psychology. Today, the co-chairs of that subcommittee, Jeanette King and David Timoney, are with me to discuss the framework, its origins, and how it can be used to advance the relevance and benefits of the field of educational psychology and also applied educational psychologists. Jeanette King is a senior researcher at McGrell International. She has experience in both classroom practice and research on the alignment of high-quality instruction and assessment to policy goals. Her primary interests focus on building research-based evidence to inform practices within an inclusive setting. Dr. King received a BA from the George Washington University, master's degrees from the University of Vermont, Bank Street College of Education, and Rutgers University, and a PhD in educational psychology from Rutgers University. David Timoney is professor of education at Delaware Valley University in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, where he also serves as chair of the Department of Education. His two primary areas of research are expertise in high-level skill acquisition and the study of learning, performance, and memory in panic scenarios for military and first responders. His dedication to applied educational psychology is what drives his commitment to the work of Division 15, the Practice Committee, and the Subcommittee on Applied Educational Psychology. He spearheaded the 2024 launch of an undergraduate major in educational psychology at Delaware Valley University. So, Jeanette and David, thanks for joining me to talk about the framework and what it means for educational psychology.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
So, let's start here. Can you help us understand what applied educational psychology is?
One of the interesting pathways for somebody with an educational psychology degree does not lie in academia, but rather taking that knowledge of theory and on how folks learn and applying it to education, industry, and business at large. And so when we talk about applied educational psychology, we're talking about learning theory and assessment theory and all the great things we know about how people learn and grow and taking them to where they're most needed, which is sometimes outside of a university setting. And I'll let David piggyback off of that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think everything you said is perfectly articulated. At Del Valle, you know, we're a recognized experiential learning school, and I really have appreciated that as a former classroom teacher, and run with that as we're developing this framework, or as we have developed the framework, because the idea of connecting science with practice sits really at the core of what we do, and to miss that applied nature of educational psychology is ignoring a substantial part of where it came from and the service that it can give to the public at large, to institutions, and to academia. It really puts legs on a lot of the great work that people are doing every day. So I think that the work that we do as part of this subcommittee is kind of putting together a set of competencies that drive that bus, right, with the legs and the wheels of theory to really make it meaningful in people's everyday lives.
That's great. And it's really essential work. So Jeanette mentioned some career paths or some places where applied educational psychologists might work. Can you give our audience a little more sense of like what kind of job titles or what kinds of career paths might people with a master's in applied educational psychology pursue?
You know, it's any organization that are invested in the development of their people and the growth of their industry, no matter what it is, have to tap into, you know, the perspectives of educational psychology. Working in complex environments, managing change, improving learning, retention, sustaining growth, right? Regardless of the context, educational psychologists are best prepared to support quality learning outcomes, whether that is in a K-12 setting, a corporate setting, a community setting. You know, folks may not even realize that they're aligned with many of the tenets and theories that we teach every day. And I think that that's what's really important to us to drive home is that, you know, you want people to develop, you want people to grow, you want people to be happy, know what they're doing and why they're doing it. And educational psychology, particularly in the applied setting, is best prepared to do that.
Mm-hmm. And just to add some specific examples onto that, because David and I and the subcommittee have been in deep discussions about places where applied psychology fit best. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't often see a job listing for applied educational psychologist. So we've mm-hmm. talked a little bit about it can be in research, it can be in evaluation for a profit or nonprofit firm, it could be in a department of education, not necessarily in a classroom. And as David mentioned, more broadly, it can be in industry where you are constantly in a cycle of improving and growing your staff capacity. And educational psychology can certainly speak to that.
That's very helpful. And it certainly sounds like an exciting and a much needed area of practice. And I'm really glad that your subcommittee has decided to create this framework. I mean, what prompted that? What led to your subcommittee and this idea for a framework for a professional master's degree?
Yeah, it started, as many things do, with whom you know and your network and conversations. Mm-hmm. And I ended up in, I guess it was 2022, in a conversation with Avi Kaplan, who is part of Division 15. Mm-hmm. And he was really interested in this idea of, we know from the research, for example, that not everybody completes a PhD. Many start and not all finish. And so we were talking about, is there a way to build a skill set in educational psychology without saying you need to go on the long path to a doctorate degree? Mm-hmm. And he put me in touch with David, who is part of the Division 15 Practice Committee, and we began to talk about what would that look like and what are the essential pieces and how could you get it done in 30 credits rather than a longer period. So that's how the conversation started. David, what would you like to add?
Gosh, I mean, it does begin with that conversation with Avi. I first met Avi when I was in graduate school at Temple University. There was someone leading a conference on some qualitative research software and some best practices and that type of work. And Avi and I sat next to each other and kind of we chatted up and got friendly. And we just kind of stayed in touch over the years. And then I had adjuncted at Temple for a time. So he and I stayed in touch, and obviously through Division 15 and such. And when the call went out, I'd heard that Jeanette was already involved. And I said, man, I'd love to put my shoulder to this work. It's to work with Jeanette would be great, but also to kind of help put into writing some of the work that all of us are doing in one way, shape, or form. I consider myself an applied educational psychologist and would love to see that development of that type of program. But also, as Jeanette had referred to, the idea that folks are going into educational psychology programs and not completing, working up a master's degree that can get folks on the ground doing the work that they've been training to do in a shorter amount of time with less credits is just a really attractive option to get folks putting themselves to the good work.
Well, and it certainly seems much needed. So as some of the more traditional paths, well, at least let's call them historic paths for an educational psychologist with a PhD, like academia, et cetera, as those are getting less and less common, I am seeing more of our graduates and other graduates going into very cool positions in industry and education, Jeanette, as you said. And so having another option at the master's level, it just seems to be a really logical next step and also one that is going to meet a real need. So I'm grateful that your subcommittee has been working on this, because I think there's going to be a lot of programs around the country that are going to see the value in having another pathway for people to develop these skills and use them out in the world. So what would you say are the underlying values and mission guiding the framework?
You know, our goal for this kind of this charge of the subcommittee is to provide this framework that will guide higher ed organizations in developing either new programs, repurposing existing programs to prepare folks at the master's level with the knowledge, skills, person-centered and social justice values and professional identities for careers that involve that application of knowledge and the methodologies of ed psych to support a variety of organizations in designing, implementing, evaluating, and improving processes that correspond with their mission and goals. One of the driving factors of the entire framework, and this is something that we as a committee agreed on early, was to focus on competencies rather than courses. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, an organization, a higher ed organization that wanted to adopt this framework could have it fit their mission and goals, could have it fit the character of their schools, rather than feel the need to adapt everything, to write new coursework. That can be, you know, from an administrative standpoint, a practical standpoint, can be very challenging. So we wanted to try to do some of that footwork on behalf of potential colleges and universities to make it just a little bit easier. There's always somebody doing that work for free in the background trying to develop new programs. So we wanted to kind of lead with making it very adaptable so that schools could maintain their own identity and not feel like they're purchasing a curriculum in a box or something like that.
Yeah, and I'll add to that that we treaded that line very carefully because we know there are some organizations out there that are going to say, just give me the recipe. We don't want to have to start all over from the ground. Whereas others are going to say, hey, we've got a lot of pieces that are working. Just tell us what we need to do to make it into what you're describing. I also want to elevate something that David said, which was really important in our early discussions, which is we also saw this applied master's framework as an opportunity to potentially bring in more diversity into our field, which is much needed, and to allow some participation from groups that might not be on the PhD track, might not have that opportunity, but bring it forward in such a way that it would allow for diverse pathways into the field and increase the representation of all folks in the work.
I love that. And, you know, as David, I think you mentioned earlier, and Janetis, I think you've implied throughout, educational psychology has applicability in all kinds of fields and all kinds of situations. And it really does have a place at both the undergraduate, the master's, and the PhD level. It would be a shame if we only thought about PhD programs in educational psychology, because Jeanette, as you said, there are people out there that want to get this knowledge and use it in the world. And we should have as many opportunities for them as possible to get that knowledge and do that good work. So I'm excited about the framework, and I'm excited about the mission for it. What's your vision for this framework and the people who obtain this kind of degree? What do you hope to see in the world manifest as a result of it?
Well, I think that, you know, primarily, as I referred to the flexibility and the customizable nature of the framework based in competencies, we also want folks to have that same experience that many of us had through our PhD program, that ability to adapt personally to the programs, to gear it towards the types of careers and outcomes that we're looking for as individuals. We want to promote the creation of positions for applied educational psychologists. We had spoken with some of the outlets where, you know, the aggregators of job sites and things like that. And, you know, it was a surprise to some of us that we found that educational psychology was an option in those drop-down lists at some of those larger hiring sites. But I don't know that I've ever seen it in a job listing, you know, as a preferred qualification, you know, a degree in educational psychology. You've got potentially programs that could turn out anyone from someone at the entrepreneurial level who could essentially go into private practice working as an educational psychologist in a variety of fields, down to or across to someone who wants to work in a K-12 setting, but they don't want to be a classroom teacher. We want to create the opportunity for folks to, you know, run the gamut of fields where educational psychology is applicable, where, you know, applied educational psychology works. If that person is more of a business-minded individual, more of a social justice-minded, a criminal justice-minded, or a K-12, you know, minded individual, they should all have a place. As you mentioned, Jeff, there's lots of places where it could fit, and we've got to be very deliberate about the opening of those doors and saying that someone at every level could, you know, step in and do their part from their standpoint. There's lots of brilliant people out there. And I think that this is just one more piece that they may need for that brilliance to show.
I love the way you put that, David. That's great. And to David's point, we all as educational psychologists recognize the value of our degrees. but employers aren't asking for educational psychologists. Instead, what they are asking for are a lot of the skills that educational psychologists are trained in. Mm-hmm. And so another vision for this work is to, as you would, increase brand recognition of mm-hmm. educational mm-hmm. psychology mm-hmm. in the larger community and let folks know the value of the skill set that educational psychologists bring. So definitely a piece of the work is to increase understanding of what educational psychology is mm-hmm. and how it can be a benefit to the larger world.
I love that. And, you know, I'd so like to see educational psychology in those drop-down menus, right? Like, and the Jeanette, as you said, the branding is really important. And one way to brand is by having people who have the degree. And by having a degree, you sort of put a box around some skills and knowledge and identities that you say, this is important. And then employers can start to realize that. So I'm really grateful for the work that your subcommittee has done. And this framework has kind of two key features, right? There's competencies, and then there are authentic experiential connections. Let's talk about the competencies first. What are some competencies that your subcommittee thought were important for this professional degree?
Well, there's four primary areas that we cover in our competencies. And some of them are based in what would be the traditional ed psych area, right? We've got one competency heading of educational psychology skills, all of the things that you really ought to know before you finish a master's program in educational psychology. Mm-hmm. All of those theory-informed ideas that you're going to work to put into action. You know, I just taught my ed psych class this morning for my teacher prep students. And the thing that I always remind them is, you know, all of these learning theories we talk about are not necessarily teaching theories. We've got to figure out ways to put those into action that right. align with the theory. And we've got to decide about where we're going to exist in this vacuum if we're going to draw in other theories or what have you. It's a common educational psychology discussion, correct? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we've got that ed psych piece. We've also got the tests and measurements piece that goes into that, right? We've got to prepare folks with externally benchmarked competencies that will prepare them to do the types of educational and psychoeducational assessments that they may be expected to do in the job, either for adults, adolescents, or children, not mm-hmm. just to administer, but to interpret, to have some fidelity and some accuracy there that they can be counted on, right? To interface with a whole host of other professionals if necessary and mm-hmm. be competent in that area. We've got a good bit of competencies in the area of program evaluation, which is well outside of my area. I was very grateful for members of the committee who could contribute in that way. But we do see that in the area of program evaluation, there's not a whole lot of master's programs that are preparing folks to go out and do that type of work. Mm-hmm. And as Jeanette had referred, there are a lot of skills that fall under the umbrella of educational psychology that are built right into this kind of work. Mm-hmm. And then finally, research, data collection, data analysis type of skills. Many of the standard types of skills you would see in an educational psychology program. But once again, we want to put those not in a, you know, not in an ivory tower somewhere, not in an old office like the one I'm sitting in, but out in the real world, right? Making good use, making meaningful use out of the research that's being conducted and the outcomes that are being assessed. Mm-hmm. And I think that within those four areas, we're covering a tremendous amount of ground. You know, I think we got some feedback at one point is how are you going to keep this within a master's degree? And we're just going to have to. But there's a lot out there, you know. And then, of course, we have the experiential component, which I think is really an exciting piece, but probably the most challenging piece for a lot of organizations to put in place because they may be tapping into existing coursework and how are they going to wrap around some experiential learning, some internships, some visits, some observations, whatever it may be, in order to round out the applied nature of this degree. And I think that that's something that'll be a bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was really critical for us to create something that wasn't just a shortened course list of mm-hmm. educational psychology PhD program, mm-hmm. but included something that would give you work experience. So you would be learning the skills, and then you would have the opportunity to apply them. And we thought that would be really valuable in many ways because you would see is this for me while mm-hmm. you were learning the task, rather than accepting a job and going, oh boy, this is not what I want to be doing. Mm-hmm. So we thought that applied piece was pretty critical to embed. But again, we wanted to make sure there were lots of options. It could be authorship or co-authorship. It could be an evaluation project. Mm-hmm. It could be a capstone project, developing or assessing an assessment. So we wanted to put some ideas out there, but we really are looking forward to the creativity of programs that are developed and adapted into this framework mm-hmm. to learn more about the feasibility and applicability of the framework.
And I thought it was a really wise idea to make it a framework and identify kind of broad competencies, because as you said, it'd be difficult to fit everything into a master's degree. You've got to pick and choose. And I can imagine how different institutions might have different priorities or different views as to what to prioritize and what not. And so that will lead to real vibrant set of programs across the country, maybe across the world, that students can choose from. And I really love the experiential component. And I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit more about what you see as the value added experiential component, kind of what you're hoping to see in programs in terms of how they implement that. Is it something that happens throughout a student's program? Is it a capstone at the end? Could it be either? I'm really interested in that part of it.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, I think it's critical if we kind of talk about the exemplar. The exemplar would be that there is some sort of embedded field work for each course, and that students can articulate that in a way that leads them to their career path. You know, I think about it very much like the PhD path. You're taking all the same courses, but by the time you're, you know, a third or a halfway in, you're really kind of turning each course into your individualized chunk, you know, mm-hmm. and it walking it towards your eventual dissertation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to have folks, you know, scholarly and career-minded from day one, whether they're going out and doing observations, working as a member of a team, mm-hmm. in any of those courses, and having a component of that course where they're contributing back, right? Where mm-hmm. where it's not just content, but it's, I took that content, I went out into the field, visited, you know, a place of business to sit in with an HR department, to sit in with someone who does training and development in a big corporate setting, and talk to them about the types of activities I'm doing in my classroom, the types of theories we're talking about, and mm-hmm. seeing where that would fit, and having them come and report back and share those ideas. And I think that that very kind of live, in vivo kind of vibrancy that they bring from the real world on a regular basis is going to be beneficial to the professors and to the students in those courses. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully, you know, they're figuring out along the way if some of these career options are realistic to them, if they're areas where they think they could thrive, areas where they think they would enjoy themselves, mm-hmm. and being kind of autonomous in that world. I think that educational psychology, applied educational psychology, really creates a lot of options. And one of the pieces of the experiential component here is marrying that theory and practice in a way that we're kind of sussing out industries as we go. Mm-hmm. I know that's critical for me. You know, every time I walk into a situation, I think, could I do this? Is this something I want to do for the rest of my life? What that's going to look like, as I mentioned, I think it's one of the tougher pieces. And the reason it's a framework and not, you know, we did refer back to like the possibility of an accrediting body. And after everyone was done cringing, gesturing and making faces, we decided, you know, we don't want to go into that world. But I think it is important for an organization, if they look at this framework and think they want to adopt it, it's not that they have to do everything in there, but I think it's important that they understand what they're doing, what they're not doing, and that they've got rationale around all of it. Mm-hmm. That if they might say like, hey, we're not going to pick up this program evaluation piece, we're going to go a little heavier on these other components, because program eval is not something that's big in our region. It's not something that our university is known for, or what have you. And I think that that is also true about the experiential component. There may be a greater need in a particular university based on their geography or the identity of that university. And I want them to really take that to heart and run with that idea mm-hmm. in order to be successful and to have their students be successful.
Yeah, it's really about fit for both the organization and the individual. And there's a piece in there about employability, because outside of academia, employers are not terribly interested in what your degree was in, but with what you've done. And so giving our candidates the opportunity to have a portfolio or be able to point to something concrete that has been achieved and demonstrates their capacity, we thought would be attractive to employers and helpful to candidates.
I love that. So the idea of putting together a portfolio, having experience and being able to say to employer, here's what I've done with everything that I've learned. Here's some examples of what I can do. I think that makes a ton of sense. And David, I really liked how you emphasized that different programs could kind of mix and match across these competencies and create different packages for people to evaluate. And I imagine, given that one of the goals of the Applied Master's program is to develop values and identities, that requires action. It requires doing the work. And these experiential components seem like a great way for people to do the work, build the portfolio, and develop the identities they need to go out there and be a really compelling candidate in the job market.
Yeah, I agree. I think the benefit we get out of this Division 15 and the Applied Ed Psych subcommittee is that you'd love to think that these folks are making really great connections for their institutions by connecting field experience with the industries, and that we're also educating the industries about the necessity of educational psychology.
Right.
And that's going to be a net gain for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So I know that issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion informed your framework. Can you talk us through how you thought about those issues and how they show up in the framework?
Yeah, we talked a little bit earlier in the podcast about how we saw this as a way to increase diversity, but also we wanted to include in the framework a statement of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we wanted to see this as potentially elevating those to the forefront of educational psychology. They're throughout the work, but for example, in our competency on testing and assessment, there's lots of work to be done to make sure that assessment is both inclusive and equitable and not used for the purpose of marginalizing groups. So we wanted to weave it throughout, but thought it was important to also to have that statement at the forefront.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's always a topic that we have to address with a great amount of care. You know, it's not any particular person or group of persons' job to diversify a workforce, a university, a department, or any of those things. But it is our role to create the substrate under which folks from a variety of backgrounds feel safe and welcome and invited, very accepted, right? You know, beyond tolerance, beyond invited, but really accepted and encouraged to participate. And I think that one of the things that we included in the framework is this expectation that programs can provide some assurances that students are prepared with the skills to be adaptive in their practices, to be inclusive in the way that they articulate and create opportunities. And, you know, we can't enforce that. Nobody can enforce that. But, you know, the proof is in the pudding. When folks who should be in the room are not in the room, we really have to be reflective with that. And there's the members of our committee, I have to admit, are just such wonderful folks and thoughtful. And they push us to really think about the language that we use, the words that we use, the way we go about making these plans, that we just can't help but, you know, but put it out there. You know, when you start talking about field experience, well, that, you know, going out into the field, making connections, doing the work, that can be a burden for some people. So how are we going to address that in ways that people feel dignified, that they feel valued and included? But then also at the end of the day, everyone who's participating has that opportunity to demonstrate their care, their competency, their insight as an applied educational psychologist. And I think that that's something that we're trying to put forward, and our ears are wide open. How can we do that better to encourage and support that for everyone?
And I was going to say there's a spur of this work that we're just embarking on about bringing the framework to the attention of colleges and universities that serve students who have been traditionally underrepresented in the field, to see if they would like to partner or learn more about the framework and how we could support that as an avenue for diversity.
That's great. And it's wonderful to hear that DEI and issues of equity and inclusion are being forefronted in the development of something involving educational psychology. You know, as we know in our field, there was this long beginning where, I mean, there was just a lot of bad practice and a lot of ways in which not only were diverse voices not included, but they were actively worked against. And it's wonderful to see something being built from the ground up with an explicit focus on issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I think that's a wonderful model for other initiatives in our field. So Jeanette, you kind of started to talk about this. I'd love to hear kind of like what are the next steps for the framework? Where is this headed? What's the subcommittee up to? And how can people help or get involved?
Yeah, David and I have had a lot of discussions about next steps and where this goes. We have a working draft of the framework, and now it's more about partnering and getting additional feedback to make it better and to make it more usable. So we're just starting on that work. We've done some conference presentations and heard both great interest and great advice on how to make it better. And I think that's the next phase. We know of at least one program that is starting with an applied master's in Ed Psych. And so our role is going to be continuing to shepherd it and learn from this next implementation phase.
Well, I'm really excited to see where this goes, and I'm thrilled to hear there's already a program that is up and running. I'm sure there'll be many more as time goes on. And how could people get in touch with this information or get in touch with you if they were interested in learning more?
Well, I mean, I think we're listed somewhere on some website as co-chairs of this subcommittee. But I mean, honestly, just Google us up and send an email or reach out directly to Division 15. We've got an open door on the subcommittee, and you know, I think more voices help us to keep the ideas fresh and diverse, and definitely more hands make for light work. As Jeanette has mentioned, we're looking at programs that are starting up, that are changing over from plain old Ed Psych to applied Ed Psych. There's a lot of excitement about that. Mm-hmm. Also, we're working to kind of amplify and advance the understanding and the good work of applied educational psychologists. So we've got some things in the hopper that we want to do to help folks better understand what educational psychology is, because I believe that the more understanding there is about the work that we do, the more likely that these programs will grow, will flourish, and be able to serve the way they should be serving in applied settings.
Let's wrap it up there for today. David and Jeanette, thank you so much for talking to me about the new framework. I really appreciate all your hard work and the entire subcommittee's hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Finally, to you, listener, if you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to check out our other episodes on your favorite podcast app and consider rating and reviewing us. You can also go to our APA Division 15 website, and all the podcasts are linked there in the publication section. Thanks again for listening.